Chapter 1. We run past the broken wing of an exploded jet fighter, the jagged metal lodged in the middle of a city street like a shark's fin. How long ago was it that we watched the jets scream by overhead, a course set for Uptown and the Anubis? It feels like days, but it must only be hours. Some of the people we're with, the survivors, they whooped and cheered when they saw the jets, like the tide was going to turn. I knew better. Kept quiet. Only a few minutes later, we could hear the explosions as the Anubis blew those jets out of the sky, scattering pieces of the Earth's most sophisticated military all over the island of Manhattan. They haven't sent any more jets in. How many deaths is that? Hundreds? Thousands? Maybe more? And it's all my fault. Because I couldn't kill Cetricus Ra when I had the chance.
On the left!
A voice shouts from somewhere behind me. I whip my head around, charge up a fireball without thinking about it, and incinerate a Moog scout as he comes around a corner. Me? Sam? The couple dozen survivors we picked up along the way? We barely break stride. We're in Lower Manhattan now. Ran here. Fought our way down, block by block, trying to put some distance between us and Midtown, where the Moogs are strongest, where we last saw the Anubis. I'm exhausted. I stumble. I can't even feel my feet anymore. They're so tired. I think I'm about to collapse. An arm goes around my shoulders and steadies me. John? Sam asks, concerned. He's holding me up. It sounds like his voice is coming through a tunnel. I try to reply to him, but the words don't come. Sam turns his head and speaks to one of the other survivors.
We need to get off the streets for a while. He needs to rest.
Next thing I know, I slump back against the wall of an apartment building lobby. I must have gone out for a minute. I try to brace myself, try to pull myself together. I have to keep fighting, but I can't do it. My body refuses to take any more punishment. I let myself slide down the wall so that I'm sitting on the floor. The carpet is covered in dust and broken glass that must have blown in from outside. There are about 25 of us huddled together here. These are all we could manage to save. Blood-stained and dirty, a few of them wounded. All of us tired. How many injuries did I heal today? It wasn't easy at first. After so many, though, I could feel my healing legacy draining my own energy. I must have hit my limit. I remember the people not by name, but how I found them or what I healed. Broken arm and pinned under car, look concerned, scared. A woman jumped from window, puts her hand on my shoulder, checking on me. I nod to tell her I'm all right, and she looks relieved. Right in front of me, Sam talks with a uniformed cop in his 50s. The cop has dried blood all over one side of his face from a cut on top of his head that I healed. I forget his name or where we found him. Their voices sound far away, like they're echoing down a mile-long tunnel. I have to focus my hearing to understand the words, and even that takes a colossal effort. My head feels wrapped in cotton.
Word came in over the radio that we've got a foothold on the Brooklyn Bridge, the cop says. NYPD, National Guard, Army, hell, everyone. They're holding the bridge, evacuating survivors from there. It's only a few blocks away, and they say the Moogs are concentrated uptown. We can make it.
Then you should go, Sam answers. Go now while the coast is clear, before another of their patrols comes through.
You should come with us, kid.
We can't, Sam replies. One of our friends is still out there. We have to find him.
Nine. That's who we have to find. The last we saw him, he was battling five in front of the United Nations. Through the United Nations. We have to find him before we can leave New York. We have to find him and save as many people as we can. I'm starting to come to my senses, but I'm still too exhausted to move. I open my mouth to speak, but all I manage to do is groan.
"He's had it," says the cop, and I know he's talking about me. "You two have done enough. Get out with us now while you can."
"He'll be fine," Sam says. The doubt in his voice makes me grit my teeth and focus. I need to press on, to dig down and keep fighting.
"He passed out.
He just needs to rest for a minute." "I'm fine," I mumble, but I don't think they hear me.
"You're gonna get killed if you stay, kid," the cop tells Sam, sternly shaking his head. "You can't keep this up. There's too many for just you two to fight. Leave it to the army, or..."
He trails off. We all know the army already made their attempt. Manhattan is lost. "We'll get out as soon as we can," Sam replies.
"You hear me down there?"
The cop is talking to me now, lecturing me in the same way Henri used to. I wonder if he's got kids somewhere.
"There's nothing left for you to do here. You got us this far. Let us do the rest. We'll carry you to the bridge if we have to."
The survivors assembled around the cop nod, murmuring in agreement. Sam looks at me, his eyebrows raised in question. His face is smeared with dirt and ash. He looks hollowed out and weak, like he's barely standing himself. A Moog blaster hangs from his hip, hooked there by a chopped piece of electric cord, and it's like Sam's entire body slumps in that direction, the extra weight threatening to pull him over. I force myself to stand up. My muscles are limp and almost useless, though. I'm trying to show the police officer and the others that I've got some fight left in me, but I can tell by the pitying way they're staring at me that I don't look very inspiring. I can barely keep my knees from shaking. For a moment, it feels like I'm going to crash down to the floor, but then something happens. I feel like a force is lifting and pulling me, supporting some of my weight, straightening my back and squaring my shoulders. I don't know how I'm doing this, where I'm finding the strength. It's almost supernatural. No. Actually, it's not supernatural at all. It's Sam. Telekinetic Sam concentrating on me, making it look like I've still got some gas left in the tank. "We're staying," I say firmly, my voice scratchy. "There are more people to save." The cop shakes his head in wonder. Behind him, a girl that I vaguely remember rescuing from a collapsing fire escape bursts into tears. I'm not sure if she's inspired or if I just look terrible. Sam remains completely focused on me, stone-faced, a fresh bead of sweat forming on his temple. "Get to safety," I tell the survivors. "Then help however you can. This is your planet. We're all going to save it together." The cop strides forward to shake my hand. His grip is like a vice.
"We won't forget you, John Smith," he says. "All of us. We owe you our lives."
"Give them hell,"
someone else says. And then, all at once, the rest of the group of survivors are blurting out their goodbyes and their gratitude. I grit my teeth in what I hope is a smile. The truth is, I'm too tired for this. The cop, he's their leader now. He'll keep them safe. He makes sure everyone keeps it quiet and quick, eventually hustling them out of the apartment building's lobby and onto the Brooklyn Bridge. As soon as we're alone, Sam releases me from the telekinetic grip he was using to hold me upright, and I slump backwards against the wall, struggling to keep my feet under me. He's out of breath and sweating from the exertion of keeping me standing. He's not Lorik, and he's had no proper training. Yet somehow, Sam has developed a legacy and begun using it the best he can. Considering our situation, he's had no choice but to learn on the fly. Sam with a legacy, if things weren't so chaotic and desperate, I'd be more excited. I'm not sure how or why this happened to him, but Sam's newfound powers are pretty much the only win we've had since coming to New York. Thanks, I say, the words coming easier now.
No problem, Sam replies, panting. You are the symbol of Earth's resistance. We can't have you laying around.
I try to push off from the wall, but my legs aren't ready yet to support my full weight. It's easier if I just lean against it and drag myself towards the nearest apartment door.
Look at me. I'm not the symbol of anything, I grumble. Come on, he says. You're exhausted.
Sam puts his arm around me, helping me along. He's dragging too, though, so I try not to put much weight on him. We've been through hell in the last few hours. The skin on my hands still tingles from how much I've had to use my lumen, tossing fireballs at squad after squad of Moog attackers. I hope the nerve endings aren't permanently singed or something. The thought of igniting my lumen right now makes my knees nearly buckle. Resistance, I say bitterly. Resistance is what happens after you lose a war, Sam.
You know what I meant, he replies.
I can tell by the way his voice shakes that it's a strain for Sam to stay optimistic after everything we've seen today. He's trying, though.
A lot of those people knew who you were. They said there was some video of you on the news, and everything that happened at the UN. You basically unmasked Cetricus Ra in front of an international audience. Everyone knows you've been fighting against the Mogadorians, that you tried to stop this.
Then they know that I failed. The door to the first-floor apartment is ajar. I shove it the rest of the way open, and Sam closes and locks it behind us. I try the nearest light switch, surprised to find that the electricity is still on here. Power seems to be spotty throughout the city. I guess this neighborhood hasn't been badly hit yet. I turn the lights off just as quickly. In our current condition, we don't want to attract the attention of any Mogadorian patrols that might be in the area. As I stumble towards a nearby futon, Sam moves around the room, closing curtains. The apartment is a small one-room studio. There's a cramped kitchen cordoned off from the main living space by a granite counter, a single closet, and a tiny bathroom. Whoever lives here definitely left in a hurry. Their clothes spilled across the floor from a hasty packing job, an overturned bowl of cereal on the counter, and a cracked picture frame near the door that looks like it was crushed underfoot. In the picture, a couple in their 20s pose in front of a tropical beach, a small monkey perched on the guy's shoulder. These people had a normal life. Even if they made it out of Manhattan into safety, that's over now. Earth will never be the same. I used to imagine a peaceful life like this for Sarah and me once the Moogs were defeated. Not a tiny apartment in New York City, but something simple and calm. There's an explosion in the distance, the Moogs destroying something uptown. I realize now how naive those life-after-war dreams were. Nothing will ever be normal after this. Sarah, I hope she's okay. It was her face that I called to mind during the roughest parts of our block-by-block battle through Manhattan. Keep fighting, and you'll get to see her again. That's what I kept telling myself. I wish I could talk to her. I need to talk to her. Not just Sarah, but Six, too. I need to get in touch with the others to find out what Sarah learned from Mark James and his mysterious contact, and to see what Six, Marina, and Adam did in Mexico. That has to have something to do with why Sam suddenly developed a legacy. What if he's not the only one? I need to know what's happening outside of New York City, but my satellite phone was destroyed when I fell into the East River, and the regular cell phone networks are down. For now, it's just me and Sam, surviving. In the kitchen, Sam opens the fridge. He pauses and glances over to me.
Is it wrong if we take some of this person's food? He asks me.
I'm sure they won't care, I reply. I close my eyes for what feels like a second, but must be longer, opening them only when a piece of bread bumps against my nose. With one hand extended theatrically like a comic book character, Sam telekinetically floats a peanut butter sandwich, a plastic container of applesauce, and a spoon in front of my face. Even feeling down and out as I am, I can't help but smile at the effort.
Sorry, I didn't mean to hit you with the sandwich, Sam says as I pluck the food out of the air. I'm still getting used to this, obviously.
No worries. It's easy to shove and pull with telekinesis. Precision's the hardest part to learn.
No kidding, he says.
You're doing amazing for someone that's had telekinesis for all of 4 hours, man. Sam sits down on the futon next to me with his own sandwich.
It helps if I imagine that I have, like, ghost hands. Does that make sense?
I think back to how I trained my own telekinesis with Henri. It seems like so long ago. I used to visualize whatever I focused on moving, and then will it to happen, I tell Sam. We started small. Henri used to toss me baseballs in the backyard, and I'd practice catching them with my mind.
Yeah, well, I don't think playing catch is really an option for me right now, Sam says. I'm finding other ways to practice.
Sam floats his sandwich up from his lap. He initially brings it too high for him to bite, but gets it at mouth level after a second more of concentration.
Not bad, I say. It's easier when I'm not thinking about it.
Like when we're fighting for our lives, for instance.
Yeah,
Sam says, shaking his head in wonder.
Are we going to talk about how this happened to me, John? Or why it happened? Or, I don't know, what it means?
Guard develop legacies in their teens, I say, shrugging. Maybe you're just a late bloomer.
Dude, have you forgotten that I'm not Lorik?
Neither is Adam, but he's got legacies, I reply.
Yeah, his gross dad hooked him up to a dead guard and...
I hold up a hand to stop Sam. All I'm saying is that it's not so cut and dry. I don't think legacies work the way my people always assumed. I pause for a moment to think. What's happened to you has to have something to do with what Six and the others did at the sanctuary.
Six did this? Sam says.
They went down there to find Lorien on Earth. I think they did it. And then, maybe, Lorien chose you. Without even realizing it, I've already devoured the sandwich and applesauce. My stomach growls. I feel a little better, my strength starting to come back to me.
Well, that's an honor, Sam says, looking down at his hands and thinking it over.
Or, more likely, thinking about Six.
A terrifying honor.
You did good out there. I couldn't have saved all those people without you, I reply, patting Sam on the back. The truth is, I don't know what the hell is going on. I don't know how or why you suddenly developed a legacy. I'm just glad you have it. I'm glad there's a little hope mixed into the death and destruction. Sam stands up, pointlessly brushing some crumbs off his dirt-cake jeans.
Yeah, that's me, the great hope for humanity, currently dying for another sandwich. You want one?
I can get it, I tell Sam, but when I lean forward to get off the futon, I'm immediately woozy, and I have to sink back down.
Take it easy,
Sam says, playing it off like he didn't notice what a mess I am.
I got the sandwiches covered.
We'll just hang here for a few more minutes, I say groggily. Then we'll go track down 9. I close my eyes, listening to Sam clatter around in the kitchen, trying to spread peanut butter with a telekinetically held knife. In the background, always in the background now, I can hear the steady thunder of fighting somewhere else in Manhattan. Sam's right. We're the resistance. We should be out there resisting. If I can just rest for a few more minutes... I don't open my eyes until Sam shakes me by the shoulder. Immediately I can tell that I've dozed off. The light in the room has changed. The street lights coming on outside. A warm yellow glow under the curtains. A plate stacked with sandwiches waits on the couch next to me. I'm tempted to dive right in and chow down. It's like all my urges are animal now. Sleep. Eat. Fight. How long was I out for? I ask Sam, sitting up, feeling a little better physically, but also feeling guilty for sleeping, when there are people dying all over New York.
About an hour, Sam replies. I was going to let you rest, but...
In explanation, Sam gestures behind him, towards the small, flat-screen television attached to the room's far wall. The local news is actually broadcasting. Sam's got the volume muted, and the picture occasionally gives way to bursts of static. But there it is. New York City. Burning. Grainy footage shows the looming hulk of the Anubis crawling across the skyline, its side-mounted cannons bombarding the uppermost floors of a skyscraper, until there's nothing left but dust.
I didn't even think to check if it was working until a few minutes ago, Sam says. I figured the Moogs would have knocked out the TV stations for, you know, war reasons.
I haven't forgotten what Cetricus Ross said to me as I dangled from his ship over the East River. He wants me to watch Earth fall. Thinking even further back to that vision of Washington, D.C., which I shared with Ella, I remember that city looking pretty busted up, but it wasn't completely razed. And there were survivors left over to serve Cetricus Ra. I think I'm beginning to understand. It's not an accident, I say to Sam, thinking out loud. He must want the humans to be able to see the destruction he's bringing down. It's not like on Lorien where his fleet just wiped everyone out. That's why he tried putting on that big show at the UN. It's why he tried all that shadowy Moog Pro shit. Bring Earth under his control, peacefully. He's planning to live here afterwards. And if they're not going to worship him like the Moogs do, he at least wants his human subjects to fear him.
Well, the fear thing is definitely working, Sam replies.
On screen... The news is switched to a live shot of an anchor at her desk. The building that houses this channel has probably taken some damage from the fighting, because it looks like they're barely keeping themselves on the air. Only half the lights are on in the studio, and the camera is cockeyed, the picture not as sharp as it should be. The anchor is trying to keep up a professional face, but her hair is caked with dust, and her eyes are red-rimmed from crying. She speaks directly into the camera for a few seconds, introducing the next piece of footage. The anchor disappears, replaced by shaky video shot with a cellular phone. In the middle of a major intersection, a blurry figure spins round and round, like an Olympic discus thrower warming up. Except this guy's not holding a discus. With inhuman strength, he's whipping around another person by the ankle. After a dozen spins, the guy lets go of the curled-up body, flinging it through the front window of a nearby movie theater. The video stays centered on the thrower as, shoulders heaving, he yells out what's probably a curse. It's 9. Sam! Turn it up! As Sam gropes for the remote, Whoever's filmed 9 dives behind a car for cover. It's disorienting as hell, but the cameraman manages to keep recording by sticking one hand above the car's trunk. A group of Mogadorian warriors have appeared in the intersection, blasting away at 9. I watch as he dances nimbly aside, then uses his telekinesis to fling a car in their direction. Again, this is footage taken in Union Square just moments ago, the shaky-voiced anchor is saying as Sam turns up the volume. We know this apparently superpowered, possibly alien teenager was at the UN scene with the other young man identified as John Smith. We see him here, engaged in combat with the Mogadorians, doing things not humanly possible. They know my name, I say quietly. Look, Sam says, hitting my arm. The camera has panned back to the movie theater, where a burly form slowly rises from the shattered window. I don't get a good look at him, but I immediately know exactly who 9 was throwing around. He flies up from the movie theater window, slashes through the few Moogs still in the intersection, and then careens violently into 9. 5, Sam says. The camera loses track of 5 and 9 as they plow through the grass of a small nearby park, churning up huge chunks of dirt as they go. They're killing each other, I say. We have to get over there.
A second extraterrestrial teenager is fighting the first, at least when they're not fighting off the invaders, the anchor says, sounding baffled. We don't know why. We don't have many answers at all at this point, I'm afraid. Just stay safe, New York. Evacuation efforts are ongoing if you have a safe route to the Brooklyn Bridge. If you're near the fighting, keep inside and...
I take the remote from Sam and turn off the TV. He watches me as I stand up, checking to make sure I'm all right. My muscles howl in protest, and I'm dizzy for a second. But I can push through. I have to push through. Never has the expression, fight like there's no tomorrow, had more meaning. If I'm going to make this right, if we're going to save Earth from Cetricus Ra and the Mogadorians, then the first steps are finding 9 and surviving New York. She said Union Square, I say. That's where we go.